Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Talladega, Alabama, you're in the pit stop with Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network. Give a big shout-out to Talladega Super Speedway, Talladega Short Track, and everybody that supports the show and everything. And without further ado, just one quick thing. The number to call in is 215-383-3681. We want to bring on our Reverend for the show, Reverend Joe, to do our invocation, and we'll get things started off. Let's bring Reverend on. Reverend Joe, how you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
We're doing good. It's getting a little bit cooler down here.
Did it get cooler there? It's still warm here.
But yes, sir. We got a front. That's right. Yes, sir. We got a front coming through. They say that we might be in the upper 50s in the morning, so that's going to be nice.
Well, that's not bad, because I guess the weather's been pretty warm otherwise. Shall we get
yes,
right
sir,
down
it's
to
been
it?
Hot.
Shall
yes,
we
sir,
right
go ahead, Reverend Joe.
Get the show started?
Yes, sir, go
you
ahead,
ready?
Reverend Joe.
All
yes,
right,
sir.
Lord, we come before you today. We thank you so much for all you do for us. We thank you for the freedom you gave us. We had no choice where we were born, and we were born in the greatest country in the world where we get a chance to not only do the things we love, but also talk to you with freedom over the airwaves and throughout our world, and we thank you for that. We ask you today not only bless this show, but bless all of our race fans, our race friends, all of those at all the racetracks all over the country. Be with them this week. Give us a great week of racing. Give those that have the weekend off a wonderful time with their families, and bless all the great things that are going on, and be with those who serve in our military to keep us free. And we thank you for all that in the name of our mighty name of Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. Amen.
Amen. There you go, Reverend Joe. Thank you very much, and a great invocation, like always. And thank you again for being a part with Speedway Digest Radio Network and the Piss Up. Excuse me, I got a little bit of sore throat going on. But, yeah, Reverend, thank you very much. And I want to give you a little bit of time, too, because you offered to do this for us, and thank you again. But you want to bring up anything about your website, anything y'all got going on, what y'all doing with the kids California?
Yeah, we got a lot of things going on coming up, and we do a biweekly invocation and such at our local Speedway. But this weekend we've got a special thing going on out at Irwindale Speedway. The three Gilliland's are going to be racing against each other. David's father, David himself, and David's young son, who's only 15. They're going to be having a big event there at the track, and the three of them are going to be in that race competing with each other, which ought to be interesting. And we'll be out there to visit with them and keep an eye on that. Also, our website is ontrackwithjesus, all one word, .org. And you can reach us through there anytime. Need prayer requests, anything you want to talk about, we're always available. And we're all glad to be with your show. And one of these days we'll get together and talk some more. And we thank you. We'll be with you next week. God bless you all.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Reverend Joe. And God bless you, too. And post some pictures on Facebook this weekend, and I'll share them for you.
I'll do that for you. Thank you very much. God bless you guys. Have a great day.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You too, Reverend. Thanks again, bud.
Thank you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was Reverend Joe. He just told me to call him Reverend Joe. And we got Todd Bigsby waiting. Todd, can you hold on just a minute? We've got some breaking news out of NASCAR I would like to read. Come out about 4:05 Central Time, my time, 5:05 Eastern. Stephen Wilson's already posted it. This is from Daytona Beach, Florida, July 15, 2014. Like I said, it's a little bit after 4 Central, 5 Eastern. Number 51 team that competes in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series has been penalized for a rouge infraction discovered in post-race inspection July 11 at Iowa Speedway. Got them again. The infraction is a P2 level penalty and violates sections 12-1, actions detrimental to stock car racing, and 20B-12.8.1, truck failed to meet post-race height requirements of the 2014 NASCAR rulebook. And I'm sitting here looking at it, and I had Suzanne try to help me out, and from what I understand, it's going to be this one right here. It's letter A. But I think this is the one, fans, if I'm wrong, y'all just correct me. This is 20B-12.8.1 body height requirements. Trucks must maintain a minimum roof height of not less than 59 inches, the truck height of the ground, off the ground, and the body height, including the rake of the degrees of body angle, shall be determined by measuring the overall height of the truck at a distance of 10 inches behind the top of the windshield on the roof center line. After competition, the truck height of the ground and the body height, including the rake or the degrees of body angle, shall be determined by measuring the overall height of the truck at a distance of 10 inches behind the top of the windshield on the roof center line and must not be less than 58 3/4 inches. I think that's what my good friend Kerry Tharp got Cobbless Motorsports on. And if I'm wrong, somebody can call in and correct me at 215-383-3681. And we've got a lot going on tonight. We've got tonight at here shortly at 7:15 Eastern Time, we've got Mr. Ron Devine, owner of BK Racing, and he's coming on. And then shortly after that, we've got Mr. Bill Kimmel, owner of Will Kimmel Racing, and Will Kimmel, his son, also driver ARCA Racing Series and NASCAR Nationwide Series. Todd, if you would, hold on just a minute. Let me get some of this. Well, Todd, I'll go ahead and bring you on. Todd, how you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing good, buddy.
All right, thank you very much. And if you can you hold there? Let me read out, because Stephen, I forgot to announce, Stephen has the night off. So I'm going solo, and I've got three guests. I might need you to stay on and help me, Todd, if that's okay with you.
That's fine with me, buddy. I'm here to help you in any way I can.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, we'll just let you fill in for Stephen. I asked Suzanne. Suzanne said that she talked to Stephen, and I don't know if he turned in sick leave or annual leave. I'm going to have to check the payroll, because if he turned in sick leave, he's going to have to bring me a doctor's excuse back, right? Are you still there, Todd?
Yes, sir.
Okay, all right. All right, let me go with this, Todd. We got a few minutes before Ron Devine, owner of BK Racing, comes on. This is from the Camping World Truck Series, the 6th Annual American Ethanol 200 from race winner Eric Jones, age 18, team number 51, Toyota Care, Toyota owner Kyle Busch, crew chief Eric Jones, which I just read out what Kerry Thought put on NASCARmedia.com about what they penalized him for. Eric Jones won the 6th Annual American Ethanol 200 presented by, I'm going to mess this up, Inogen. His second victory in 9 NASCAR Camping World Truck Series races. His first win came last November at Phoenix International Raceway. Jones led 131 laps, set a new career high. His previous high was 84 in his Phoenix win. This is his first victory and first top 10 finish in 2014. This is his first victory and third top 10 finish in 3 races at Iowa Speedway. Ryan Blaney finished second, posted his third top 10 finish in 4 races at Iowa Speedway. It is his 7th top 10 finish in 2014. Matt Crafton finished third, posted his 8th top 10 finish in 8 races at Iowa Speedway. Ben Kennedy finished 6th, was the highest finishing Sunoco rookie. Matt Crafton leads the point standings by 2 points over Ryan Blaney. That is from Iowa Speedway, from my good friend Mr. Jimmy Small, president out there. Now, since Steven's not here, I've got to go through all of it. All right, let's go to the Nationwide Series. New Hampshire Motor Speedway 25th Annual Stay Green 200. Well, NASCAR Nationwide Series. Race winner was Brad Keselowski, age 30. Team number 22, Hertz Ford. Owner Roger Penske, crew chief Jeremy Bowens. Brad Keselowski won the 25th Annual State Grand 200, his 29th victory in 211 NASCAR Nationwide Series starts. He breaks a tie with Matt Kenseth for sole possession of 6th on the all-time NASCAR Nationwide Series wins list. This is his second victory and 6th top 10 finish in 2014. This is his second victory and 6th top 10 finish in 6 races at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. Kyle Busch finished 2nd, posted his 6th top 10 finish in 9 races at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. It is his 13th top 10 finish in 2014. Matt Kenseth finished 3rd, posted his 7th top 10 finish in 9 races at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. Chris Buescher finished 5th, was the highest finishing rookie. Reagan Smith, who won the $100,000 bonus for winning the Nationwide Insurance Dash for Cash, leads the point standings by 8 points over Elliott Sadler. All right, one more, Todd, and then we'll talk about some stuff. Now to the Cup side of it. New Hampshire Motor Speedway 22nd Annual Camping World RV Sales 301. Race winner was Brad Keselowski. He swept the weekend. Age 30, team number 2, Reds Ford, owner Roger Penske, crew chief Paul Wolf. Brad Keselowski won the 22nd Annual Camping World RV Sales 301, his 13th victory in 180 NASCAR Sprint Cup Series races. This is his 3rd victory and 10th top 10 finish in 2014. He's now tied with Jimmy Johnson for the 2014 Series wins lead. This is his first victory and 6th top 10 finish in 10 races at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. There have now been 13 different winners in the last 13 races at New Hampshire, which ties a record for the longest streak of different winners at a racetrack, which earlier was Texas Motor Speedway. Ford has now won 4 consecutive races, its longest streak since 2001. Kyle Busch finished 2nd, has now scored 3 consecutive runner-up finishes at New Hampshire. It was his 9th top 10 finish in 19 races at New Hampshire. It is his 8th top 10 finish in 2014. Kyle Larson, 3rd, posted his 4th career top 5 finish. Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Brad Keselowski have clinched a spot in the chase for the NASCAR Sprint Cup, assuming they attempt to qualify for the remaining 7 races in the regular series. When they say attempt to qualify, you know, that's what, you know, they have to do that to be included in that. And Todd, if you hold on a minute, we've got Mr. Ron Devine coming on. Let me bring Ron on, and we're going to bring Ron Devine on, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Ron Devine, you're in the pit stop doing this place, Stephen Wilson. How you doing, Mr. Devine?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I don't know if you heard me earlier. Having to go solo. My sidekick, Stephen Wilson, is off tonight. So, and you know, of all times, we got three guests, but we're doing okay. I was gonna read off some stuff about your race teams and all that, but Ron, if you got the floor, if you want to talk about anything that you want to talk about for our sponsorships, things y'all got going on, you got it, bud. Go ahead.
Okay, so who's on? Who's on this now?
It's
hello.
It's just myself. Can you hear me, Ron?
Yeah, I can hear you. Okay.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
okay.
Sounds like you're going in and out, Ron. I still got you.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes, sir. I got you now.
Okay. Yeah, because you were breaking in and out too.
Okay.
All right.
But yeah.
So.
Thanks for coming on the show, Ron. If you didn't hear it earlier, you know, just wanted to thank you again. My good friend Stephen Wilson's he's off tonight, so I'm having to do this solo. I got you and got my good friend Todd Bigsby from upstate New York, and you know, we got Bill and Will Kimmel coming on. But just wanted to give you a little bit of, you know, airtime to promote whatever you got going on, your sponsorships, any new news. Ron, you got the floor, bud.
So, you know, BK Racing has had an interesting year this year. I mean, we added the 26 car with Cole Witt. We have picked up some sponsorship. We're very excited to have Speed Stick join us. They are a great company, and so far they've been a great sponsor, and we're really excited to have a future with them. The Renine tankless water, hot water heaters, also sponsored a race with us, and we're expecting to, you know, do more and more with them. We've picked up some apparel sponsors with this latest one is Tap Out coming on with us. So you'll see some, you know, some activity around that coming up here soon. And, you know, of course, then we have the Dr. Pepper car, the 23 with Alex Bowman's driving. And we're very, you know, we've had a great relationship with Dr. Pepper for so many years in the Burger King business. And, you know, they've really stepped up this year to be a big part of it. And, of course, our roots are the Burger King system, and that's what Ryan Truex is driving. And I don't want to put everybody to sleep, but, you know, those are our three full-time cars, the 23, the 26, and the 83. And, of course, we have the 93 that we, you know, are trying to get on the track. We just haven't been able to get it put together yet. You know, news-wise, I mean, I was up in Loudon, you know, it turned into the Morgan Shepherd race. You know, I felt bad for Brad. I mean, what a car Brad Keselowski had. And then, you know, Morgan got tangled up with Joey Logano and, you know, dominated the airways for a couple of days. But I, you know, we had a pretty good little run going there. It took us a while to get the car moving, but we were running times, you know, with the top cars, but we found ourselves a lap down early. We didn't start out very well. So, you know, nobody knows it, but we know it. So we felt real good about our performance on the flat track up there. What do you want to hear about? What kind of things are you interested in from BK Racing's side of the world?
Well, me and since Steven's off, you know, Steven's on vacation, he wanted me to ask you a couple of questions. I think he wanted, I can't remember exactly what they were, but I think one of them was about what do y'all have as far as, you know, trying to get the three cars running better, you know, finishing a little bit higher. Stephen wanted me to ask that, you know, y'all have, you know, trying to get better, which, you know, that's just a question.
Yeah, so, you know, the tricky side of this sport right now is the engineering. And, you know, with the changes this year, our notes from last year really had to be redone. So we're expecting better results as we go back to the tracks now because we've got some more experience on it. We have done some testing, and we've been in the wind tunnel a number of times. But we've changed our engineering side of the business quite a bit. So it's a little bit of setup issue, and it's a little bit of just experience to be able to get out there and spend more time on the track. We also are running three rookies. So as they get more laps, they get better and better and better. So we do expect to see our performance start to pick up. And just like in New Hampshire, sometimes you can't see it. You know, our results look like we were in the 30s all day, and we were. That's where we finished. But our times were running in the middle of the pack, you know, albeit crummy that we were a lap or two down before we got it going. Then on the motor side of it, I'm very proud of our motors. We're building our own motors. We have BK engines. And, you know, we found a little bit. We're taking some stuff with us to Indy. You know, it's really a balance between horsepower and performance and reliability. So, you know, we can crank them up, but we don't want to blow them up. So far we haven't had an engine failure. You know, the season's a little over half over, and we're pretty solid so far. And now you're going to see us work on the mapping and the performance of the motor side of it. But, you know, I'm telling you, I'm very proud of our motor guys. They've been working around the clock and very hard and doing a terrific job for us. I'm very happy with the way that's coming together. So those are the type of changes that we're trying to make and just getting some more experience with us. And, you know, the sponsorships seem to be reacting well to that. And so we feel pretty good about the second half of the season. We'll see how it unfolds. What was your
that
other question?
Sounds good, Ron. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got sort of like a twofold question here. The 93 car, when are y'all planning on running it next, the fourth car in y'all's stable, Ron?
You know, we've tried to take it. Here's the problem is, you know, just being able to get enough of the parts together to do it right. You know, we went out there and we've tested a couple things. We've had some trouble, you know, just a few different things we wanted to try, and they didn't work out very well. That's why we, you know, had a couple of short races there. But we, you know, didn't have really time to put it together right. We saw an opportunity, you know, to put them on the track and give it a go. And I'd like to see us work with some more of the veterans in that 93 team. We'd love to, you know, get the resources together to get it out there on a probably not a full-time basis, but at least pulse it in a couple more times and you know, hopefully get a better run out of it. But I don't really have a time frame to say this is when we're going to do it and this is what we're going to do. We're just looking at the opportunities and just trying to, you know, be mindful of not destroying the other teams. I mean, that third team, when the 26 came along, it really depleted our inventory, and we're just now getting it back built up. You know, we describe it as getting our feet back up underneath of us a little bit, and I also think that'll help performance as we go forward, is just being able to catch up a little bit with that third team. What was the second
yes,
piece
sir.
Of that?
Yes, sir. And do you have a standby driver, Ron? You know, just throwing that out, do y'all have a standby driver set for any of y'all's teams in case something happens?
I wouldn't say there's one. I think there's a short list of guys that we're comfortable with that know our stuff. I mean, you saw us putting Mike Bliss out there, and, you know, we've always had a great relationship with Travis, and, you know, he's busy, you know, driving the 32 and in certain races. So it depends. So I don't think we have, like, one go-to guy. You know, we want to take our rookies to the test with us, so I didn't really put a test driver out there. I'm trying to get them as many laps as we can and as much experience as they can. So we take them to the test with us for right now. But, you know, I think we do have a short list, and everything from Travis to the Mike Blisses of the world to just, you know, there's a couple of, you know, other rookies. I'm kind of leaning more towards some experience in that 93 than I'm afraid if we put four rookies out there, they'll run me out of the garage. You know, they think I've completely lost my mind. So.
Yes, but anyway, I've got my real good friend Will Kimmel and his dad Bill Kimmel. You know who they
yeah,
are?
Yeah, of course I know. I know them by name. We don't know each other, but I certainly watch them and have seen their success, and I know who they are for sure.
And, you know, Bill was Frank's crew chief in the ARCA series there for a long time. I don't know how many championships Bill won with him, but I wanted to bring them on with you. Is Is that okay, Ron? Can we bring
sure.
Bill and Will on?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
I'm
going to
give him a big round of
sleep anyway.
No, sir, you wouldn't. No, sir, you well, I hit the wrong button. We're going to bring Bill, Mr. Bill Kimmel and Mr. Will Kimmel. Oh, I hit
how
the,
you doing,
guys? Right, there we go.
How y'all
doing? Great. How y'all doing, Bill?
We're doing good.
Bill, I'm going to let you have the floor with Mr. Ron Devine, if that's okay, and I'll step aside. We've got Will right there with you, too. So y'all three got the floor if y'all want to talk.
No, not a problem. I was listening to him talk about the rookies, and boy, do I understand that. You know, and that was one of the things that we'd struggled with Will the last few years, and I kind of explained to him, you got to get to the end of the race. We just have to get to the end of the races. And sometimes being the fastest thing out there isn't the best thing for us. And I'm sure Ron understands what I'm talking about because, you know, it's hard to have the resources to run with, especially some of the people that you're trying to run with. And it's the same way in my deal. It's a smaller arena, so to speak. But then we got to finish races. And we started doing that in the last couple of years. And fortunately for us, our finishes are starting to show now.
Yeah, you guys seem to be running good. And you're right. I mean, you know, these guys are running with the best in the world out there. And they got to learn how to compete with them. And it's not easy. You know, if it was easy, you know, there'd be a long line of people at the gate. But, you know, they're not, you know, don't be afraid of the competitors. But I got to tell you, the second you don't respect them, you know, you're watching them. So.
What you said, respect, and I've told, you know, Will from day one, you know, sometimes they don't understand. I've got young kids in my car from time to time right now, and I said, you know, you've got to earn their respect before you can race with them.
Yeah.
Because they are so good that they will not allow you to race with them until you earn that respect. And that respect means not crashing in front of them. It means not overdriving a turn and running to the side of them. And
right.
It means keeping the car clean on pit road and everything. So there's a whole lot more to it sometimes than what people see on TV or see from the grandstands. It's a pretty tough deal.
Sure. You know, I've tried to explain to them that, you know, you are you, but you're going to have a relationship with these guys. It's going to be different with each one of them. You know, some of them are going to race you hard. Some of them are going to race you clean. Some of them are going to rough you up. You know, and your relationship that you build with them is what's going to determine your place in this sport. So, you know, we harp on that quite a bit with them. And for the most part, I'm proud of these guys. You know, we've certainly had our moments, but, you know, they're this little Cole Witt guy driving the 26, I'll tell you what, he is, you know, I look at him as who's got the car control. And all three of these young guys have good car control. But to watch that Cole Witt get out there and mix it up with them, he's, you know, I don't know if I should say this or not, but we were at the driver's meeting, and I guess I should just say one of the other drivers from Daytona said, because we were all qualifying, you know what kind of a mess that turned out to be, right? But Cole jumped up in there with that group and ran with them, and one of the guys in that pack said, hey, you did a really nice job of holding your line and, you know, running with us on that. It was very comfortable having you there. And I slapped him on the arm, and I go, there you go. That's how you get in there with them. You know?
Because the next time they qualify, they'll be looking for him. That's right.
That's right. And, you know, I'm not sure what the rules will be when we get back out there, but, you know, that's that kind of respect that you earn with your performance. And it's critically important in every sport, but it's equally as important in these NASCAR things, so.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, because we have 40, you know, you have 40 teams where stick and ball sports have two, so to speak, you know.
Right.
And you got 40 different personalities that you've got to deal with every single weekend. So it's a pretty
right.
cool deal, though. I mean, I wouldn't change it for the world. We've done it for so long that I wouldn't know what else to do. So.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of the same way. I mean, I started running around these little tracks up here in Manassas, Virginia, since I was a little teeny kid on a fire truck. And, you know, you just, if you like competition, it's a great place to be. You know,
absolutely.
Good competition. So you guys want to drive the 93? You all want to take that thing over and have at it?
Yeah.
No, I'm going to tell you all, it's direct that over here this way. Ain't no two.
There you go,
back.
Will.
One.
There you go, Will.
Yeah, I think
no,
that
Will.
Series has passed me up.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Like jumping up in the draft like that, I could only imagine what that was like, you know, because when we went to the Phoenix deal with the Nationwide race, going out just to practice and being in the new series like that, you know, a series you watch on TV all the time, it tends to get your attention. So I can only imagine what that'd be like.
Yeah, I think it happens quick.
Yeah.
Those guys are moving out there.
Yep.
Well, you know,
Ron,
there's you somebody that, you know, you might can depend on down the road, Mr. Will Kimmel.
There you go.
If you ever get in a bind, because I'm at, he was well, I'm gonna bring this up, and Bill, I'm gonna bring it up. Suzanne might get mad, but I got to hang out with him at you know, during the ARCA stuff here at Talladega, and Will had the fastest car in I think it was final practice, wasn't it, Bill? He had the fastest car in practice. Well, then he qualified fourth, and he started the race, fell back to sixth, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Kimmel, 30-something laps in, right before y'all were going to pit, the motor let go. And,
that's right.
You know, and my goodness. And the first thing Bill done was blame it on my wife, Suzanne, because Suzanne didn't come Thursday and Friday. She comes Saturday and Sunday, and Bill says, Suzanne, it's your fault. I just want to throw that out there for a little joke. But yeah, I'm gonna sit back on the side, Ron, and you can stay as long as you want. If you need to go, if you're busy or whatever, we'll just let you and Will talk, or you and Bill talk.
You know, I can go in the pits, or I can stay out here with you. It's up to you. I said, you know, whatever you want.
We're at in Virginia.
So I was actually born in D.C., and, you know, we moved to Falls Church when I was young, but most of my life I spent in Springfield, which is right at the corner of the Beltway around D.C. and 95 going south. And then Old Dominion Speedway is in Manassas. It's shut down now. They're rebuilding it south on 95 about three-quarters of the way to Richmond, which is about an hour out of D.C. And it's going to be a great facility. I'll tell you guys about that if you want to hear it.
Absolutely.
Because
we need new racetracks.
Yeah, no, this is going to be a great facility. It's called Dominion Speedway. Steve and Carrie Britt are the owners of it, and they're building a drag strip, which is, you know, part of the Manassas, you know, leftover. I mean, they ran a drag strip out there since the, you know, I think they ran stagecoaches down it when they opened it, and then they have a 2.5 mile road course on it, and then they have a. Did you ever drive? Either one of you guys ever drive Old Dominion? Do you remember that speedway at all?
I do remember.
I remember reading about it with the modifieds.
Well, the modifieds fly around there, but, you know, they run late models. The Gore family built it, Al Gore and Dickie Gore and Gary Gore. And, you know, they're big names in NASCAR and the Saturday Night Series. And actually, I think it was Dickie Gore that conceived the late model division. And so, you know, they put all that here. Maybe they had some great racers go through there. You know, everything from the Darrell Waltrips of the world to the Benny Parsons. I mean, those guys raced over there. But it was a strange track. You know, one and two was a, you know, it's high bank. You know, it's a half, the 3/8 mile. And one and two is kind of tight, and then three and four opens up. So they're building this new Dominion to basically be symmetrical, just like the one and two was. That's where all the action was. It was a high bank and a tight turn and still be a 3/8 mile so they can run their motors. You know, it's one of these grandstands with the, you know, the center building so that it looks into the drags in one way and the road course, you know, goes through it and then wraps all around the round track, and then you got the 3/8 mile oval on the other side of it. So it's, you know, it's going
to
be a great
place
facility
for ARCA cars to go.
Yeah, well, you know, they could have some races. They could have the trucks there and the ARCAs and, you know, who knows where it goes. But, you know, we're going to try to make that a big part of BK Racing and, you know, get out on that road course and practice and, you know, maybe help us with the Bristol setups and things like that. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But It's in Thornburg, Virginia, just north of Richmond. And it's going to be a great track. Should open next year sometime around April.
Well, the reason I'd ask, my dad used to race down in Huntington, West Virginia all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you bring up Waltrip. I can remember when they'd actually paid Dad $200 a week to go down and race against Waltrip when he was a young racer and really just dominated the racetracks in Owensboro. And we'd have to go down there every Saturday night and run down there. And
mm-hmm.
God, it brings back a lot of the old memories, I'll tell you. So, and, you know, the NASCAR late model stuff is what I raced all the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's good competitive racing. It's, you know, you certainly don't do it for the money, but it's fun to cut your teeth there, you know. And I took a couple laps around there. I've been around it. My career would have ended a long time ago, long before this radio show. it's not noteworthy. I do have a fire suit that I can't get in any longer.
I do too.
Make sure,
y'all. So what are your guys' plans? Are you headed to the Cup, or what are you thinking?
Oh, no, I am happy where I'm at. I think you have to know where you're at in any sport. I would like for Will to go on. That's why we try to get him in some nationwide races. And Frank and I ran a couple of Cup races back in the early 2000s. It didn't fit where we were at. We should have been, if we were going to run a Cup deal, we should have been there in the 80s. And
that's just
the way it would have worked for us. You know, so many people try to kid themselves sometime and at every level and think they are or they're really not. And if I tried to do something like that, that's exactly where I would be. I even had to rouse people talk to me the other day and said, why don't we do this truck deal, this take that nationwide and talk to Ingersoll. Maybe we can do a Cup deal or nationwide yourself. I said, you know, I would be good the 15th, but past 15th, I'd be in trouble. Because in the same deal, you know, you're fighting the same thing, and you got to fight City Hall, so to speak. And man, I just, you know, I can't do that. I don't know that. So, but I'm happy.
Well, you know,
what people
don't realize is the competitiveness up there. I mean, you know, the whole field's separated by less than a second, and you know, they think you're, struggling. You're running 30th, but you're 8/10 off the lead. You know,
exactly right.
It's crazy how competitive it is. And
you go and you miss a pole by 3/4 of a second, and you're 30th fastest qualifier.
Right. Yeah. It took me a while to get my head around that. I'm not going to kid you. I was like, okay, so let me get this straight. We're 4/10 off, and we're in 28th place. Let me just give me a minute with that.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah,
and that 4/10 is big. You know, that's an expensive 4/10 to find.
And you can't find it, you know. We're doing gains and little teeny here and there, and changing our fuel rail, and you know, chopping on this and cutting on that, and you know, you're trying to pick up a tenth. So,
well, I know
crazy.
It is tough.
I understand that.
That's why people love it. You know, that's the other side of it.
But when you have that good day, at my level or your level, it makes it all worth it, though.
Yeah.
So, you know, you keep fighting it, I guess. So, I mean, just like we had a wonderful race at Talladega and Daytona both. And just it didn't get to the end like it should, but that's part of it as well. So,
you know, they're trying to get me to tweet. I don't tweet. I look at it. I watch it and read it and all that stuff, but I've never actually tweeted. And so I said my first tweet's going to be in victory lane, see photo. So I'm waiting for that moment to come along. I hope I don't die waiting to make my first tweet. But
no.
We'll
not,
see.
Come on, Ron. Come on.
Well, Dad definitely is not going to tweet. I'll tell you that right now. He does good work at Facebook. And that's going to happen.
Yeah, I think
and
our generation is. Yeah. We're,
they keep me working too much.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like another job.
Well, Ron and Bill, can I interrupt here for just a second? We've left Will sort of standing back. Bill, can we bring Will on?
Absolutely. He's right. He should be on there.
I'm here. Yes, sir, he is. But okay, Will, go ahead if you want to talk to Mr. Ron Devine, owner of BK Racing, and tell them what all you got going on. We'll let y'all have the morning. Me and Bill will step back.
Oh, I just, you know, I enjoy listening to the stories and stuff. I kind of get caught up in that because I'm pretty big on the history of our family. So that's the reason you see white wheels and the white numbers and stuff. That's what my grandpa raced at the fairgrounds, which is our local track back in the day. So when you start talking about old tracks and stuff, I tend to shut up and I just start listening because I enjoy the older stories like that. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. Well, and Will, aren't you racing in the Nationwide Series at Chicago this coming time?
No,
did I
see
that ride or did I miss?
We won't be racing at Chicago this weekend. I'll run the ARCA car at Chicago this weekend, and then we run the Nationwide race. Dad, you have to help me. When is the Salem race? September 13th. I'm actually going to run the ARCA race at Salem right after I run the ARCA or the Nationwide race at Chicago. And it's funny that Ron's on here because last year your driver did the same thing, Ron, and he had to fly into Salem to race. Maybe that was that could have been 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I remember that actually. Yeah. Well, how old are you now, Will?
I'm 26.
26. Okay. So, you know, I mean, keep at it. You know what I mean? I wish I could get back in the seat. It's great to see you running out there. Anywhere.
I appreciate it. Oh yeah. Yeah. We got a late model race coming up this Friday. It's going to be with Excel Performance Group, and it's actually the Circle Track project car, and that's going to be at ORP on Friday night. And then after that week from this Friday, I'm sorry. And then that's right after Chicago. So I got some racing coming up here with the ARCA car and the late model, and we might do some street stock stuff at Salem later in the year, and of course the Nationwide deal. But I'm trying to get in every seat I can, that's no doubt.
Well, I wish I had a Nationwide team. We'd try something. I don't, you know, we've talked about it, but I can't figure it out. So we're just swamped in our world. What's your best track? What do you like to race?
Any of them, actually.
There you go.
I know that's really cliche, but I'm serious. I mean, if I can just get in a race car and go, I'm pretty happy with it. I enjoyed Bristol this year. That was such a racy track for a half mile like that. It was a lot of fun. So I like Bristol this weekend or this past spring, and you know, places like that, the short tracks I enjoy. But you know,
yeah.
Racing in general is awesome.
People ask me all the time, what's your favorite race? I say the Bristol Night Race. I'm not sure why, but you know, that's a cool place.
You ever been to Salem, Ron?
No, I've never been there. I know about it, but
I mean,
is it cool?
They have the night race at Salem is just like the Bristol deal. It is unbelievable. I mean, it's a lot of fireworks. I'm telling you, you can see the racetracks banked as much, and it's a little bit bigger than Bristol and a lot rougher. It's a rough ass place, so it's a cool place to go watch a race, just like the Bristol deal.
Yeah, well. I'll tell you, it's a real honor to be on with the Kimmels. You guys are great. We don't know each other, but I certainly know you all by name, and I watch you all the time. And you know, it's nice to talk with you and get to meet you. I look forward to seeing you out there again.
Well, I appreciate the compliment. That says a lot coming from a cup owner, and you know, I think it's pretty cool that you got an ARCA racer in your car. You know, I actually spoke briefly with Alex at Michigan, so that's pretty cool what you got going on there. And you know, me and Dad definitely appreciate those compliments. That's pretty neat.
Well, I really like Alex a lot. I mean, I think we were lucky to, you know, to get him. He was, you know, one of the better car control guys that was available. And you know, they're 20, right? 20. Well, actually, he's 21 now. We can run the Coors sticker on our car, so he finally did that. But you know, they're about 2/3 of the way to crazy. I mean, he can't wait to have his drift car put together. That's what he's trying to do. You know, he wants to go drifting. So you're going to see him out there. I have a feeling somehow, some way. But he's a wonderful young man. He really is, and I think he's got a great future ahead of him. And you know, we're excited to have him in the car. So I'll tell him you said hello at least, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it.
All right. Did we lost the host?
Yeah, it was your show.
No, I'm still here. I'm still here. I'm sort of like Will, Ron, and Bill. I just like listening to stories and all that. But no, Ron, thank you again. I know you got a busy schedule, and thank you very much for coming on. And I'll send you Bill and Will's contacts, and y'all can sort of stay in touch. And if y'all ever, now I'm just throwing this out there. I'm not trying to stir nothing up. If you ever need a standby driver, this young man right here is the one, and he's racing part time, so you could probably get him if anything ever happens.
So,
just throw that out there, Ron.
You know, Will, you got to go through and get, you know, certified to be able to run at the cup level, right? You got to go through all that stuff and get up with them and all that. But you never know, right? And I do hope one day. I'll close with this. I hope one day that you know we become a real part of the Cup Series. We're certainly working hard enough at it, and we're committed to it. You know, we're trying real hard to make our mark in it, and it's very difficult, as the whole Kimmel family knows. And you know, I hope one day to be a big part of it. I really do. So I appreciate you having
me
on.
It.
And all the best to you, you know, anytime. And, you know, we'll see. It ought to be an interesting second half of the season.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, Ron.
Nice talking to you, Ron. Thank you.
All right. Nice to meet you all, and I appreciate it. I'll let you all be, okay?
Hey, thank you.
Yep.
All right, take
thanks,
care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
You have a good off weekend.
Okay, thanks. See you later.
All right, bud. Well, Bill and Will, that was Mr. Ron Devine. I think I'm like Will. We heard a bunch of good stories. I'm like Will. I'd rather just sit back here and let Bill and Ron talk, wouldn't you, Will?
Oh yeah.
But anyway,
that's
I know
good.
Y'all are busy also. I know y'all are busy also, Bill and Will. But anything y'all want to throw out about sponsorship, anything y'all got coming up, new stuff, we'll let y'all have the floor and. Y'all got
well,
it.
We're just trying to get things going. you know, we've got some announcements we hope we can make next year. We're trying. You know, it looks like Michael Lear is coming back with us next year. Got a couple other ones looking at it, and we got some stuff for Will that I'm hoping that we can announce before the end of the year that he's going to run some more races and maybe even some more nationwide races as well.
Yeah, just the usual deal, you know, working hard to get to the racetrack. But Circle Track, Messina and Ingersoll Rand have definitely helped out this year. And like I said, we got Excel Performance Group on the late model this coming weekend. So headed in the right direction anyway. And, you know, Dad's worked all hard to get me in the car, and it's been really fun so far. So we're just going to keep going.
That sounds good, Will. And, Will, I want to thank you and Bill, too, also for being such a good friends to me and Suzanne. And I told Suzanne the other day she cannot come back to the track in the spring when the ARCA's running.
We'll prove it. We'll prove it all in her anyway.
You got to blame it on somebody, haven't we, Bill?
Yeah, exactly. But we appreciate
right.
you having us, Tim. I really do. And stay in touch, please.
Yes, sir, we will. Thank you, Bill. And yes, sir. And I will share Ron's contacts with y'all. And if something happens, maybe something happened, bud.
You never know, man. Thanks, Timmy.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Appreciate
it. Yes, sir.
Thank
y'all. Yes, sir, bud. See y'all. Todd, I know I kept you on hold for a long time, but we had the Kimmels, we had Ron Devine, and. You know.
That's all right, buddy.
Okay. Sorry about that. But thanks for staying on just in case I need some help, because I don't know where Steven's at. I don't know if he's kayaking or I don't know. He might not be doing nothing. But anyway. Okay, Todd, you got the floor. Anything you want to talk about this past weekend or about what you have going on for autism or anything, you got it, bud.
Well, I'm still collecting tabs for the Kids for Cancer in Florida for Darian Martin Racing. You were the first one I shared some news with earlier.
Yes, sir, I've seen that.
Yeah, I got a good steal. So that kind of opened the doorway for me, because here in August we have the Corning, which they shut down part of the city for all their cars on display. We never know who's going to bring their cup cars, their show cars down. I'm believing we're going to be able to get to go to the Glen for my girlfriend's first race ever.
That's cool. That's cool, Todd. And, Todd, can you hold on for a minute? We've got our weather guy coming on, Mr. Tim Campbell. We've got Tim. Let's bring our weather guy on, Todd, and I'll keep you on live with us. Here we go, Mr. Tim Campbell. This is our weatherman, Mr. Tim Campbell from Stillwater, Oklahoma. How you doing tonight, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. I just got to tell you happy birthday and give you your weekend forecast here. Hopefully all the rain will be this weekend, and that way it won't be next weekend when the race is on.
Thank you very much, Tim. You got the floor, bud. You and Todd Bigsby. Todd's right there with you now.
Okay, for Friday, your birthday, we're looking at mostly cloudy with a 20% chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon and lows in the upper 80s. And Friday night, we're looking at a 50% chance of thunderstorms, lows in the 70s. And Saturday during the daytime, we're looking at showers with a chance of thunderstorms, highs in the mid 80s, and 60% chance of thunderstorms. And 50% chance of thunderstorms in the evening with low around 70. And Sunday's got a 50% chance of thunderstorms, highs in the upper 80s. And Sunday night's mostly cloudy with a chance of thunderstorms, or slight chance of thunderstorms, lows in the upper 60s. And so it looks like you might have a rainy weekend during Talladega.
We need it, Tim, because I walked across my front yard earlier and my grass is just crunching.
Yeah, we need it out here, too. We can't get none. Everybody else is getting it. I guess they're getting it bad up around Massachusetts today and New York and all up in that area. And so.
That's what I was going to say, Tim. You know, Todd's up close to Watkins Glen. Todd, how's the weather up there?
Well, we've had rain on and off, and the grass is definitely loving it because, like you say, it was crunchy, and now it's nice and soft.
Oh, we lost Todd. We lost Tim. Tim must have dropped. Yeah, we lost him. But anyway, Suzanne's got somebody in the screen room. It's probably either going to be Tony B or Tina Stowe. But Todd, me and Suzanne were watching the race Sunday, and did you see whenever they say Morgan Shepherd come up into Joey Logano and put him in the wall? Well, anyway, I called SiriusXM Radio, and this was my take on it. I know Morgan, but if he was not running the minimum speed, NASCAR would black flag him and pull him off the track. But Morgan went down low to let Joey Logano go up high. I think he was 10, 11 laps down. And, you know, he's 72 years old. I'm taking up for my buddy Morgan Shepherd. When Joey come down on him, try to get some side draft. I'm probably going to make a lot of people mad, but this is my take of it. When Joey come down and tried to get a side draft off of Morgan in 3 and 4, he pulled that car around on him. And touchy situation. Suzanne told me not to talk about it because I called in and talked to Claire B. Lang about it, and I don't think anybody agreed with me. What's your take on that, Todd?
Well, I totally have to agree with you. You know, these new cars, the way they're set up, you know, when you can get that side draft, you know, from what I have seen, it kind of slows down the other person, so it kind of gives you like a slingshot type of deal. But the caution of that is that can also get the cars loose. And I believe that's what Joey's problem is, because he was too much into the pedal.
I will agree. And, you know, which I know he, you know, racers are racers. You're going to pull down there and try to get that side draft. But I actually think that's what happened, Todd. And all of our NASCAR fans might try to crucify me for taking up for Morgan. But, I mean, you know, the truth's the truth, and that's what I've seen. That's, you know, I can I have freedom of speech, and I'm going to speak it, and that's what I think, Todd. But anyway, Todd, we've got Miss NHRA, if you want to stay on here with us, Miss Tina Stull. We're going to bring Tina Stull on the pit stop with, we're going to say, Tim Despang and Steve. I don't know where Steven Wilson is. I ain't going to tell him where he is. Anyway,
let's get ready to rumble!
Miss Tina Stull, how are you doing tonight, sweetie?
I am doing great. How are you doing?
We're doing good. I don't know if you heard me earlier. I'm having to go solo, which Todd Bigsby agreed to stay in. Stephen Wilson's off tonight. So I asked Suzanne,
now,
I said, I don't know if you heard this.
Or did he get the night off?
I don't know. That's what I asked Suzanne. I said, did he turn in vacation or sick leave? She said she didn't know. So we'll find out later. If he's playing hooky, we'll
talk. Good to be the boss.
Yeah, that's right. He gets to take off. But anyway, Tina, thanks for taking your time out to come on to. I got Todd Bigsby from Watkins Glen sort of staying in here, helping me out in case I need some help. But
that's a beautiful track. That's a beautiful track. But that's about one of the only tracks they let me be in a straight line or drive. And had a great time out there. Didn't get to go very fast, but they let us do it for a movie called Fireball Run that we did 2 years ago. And a bunch of us crazies got out there and got to, you know, take a loop around Watkins Glen.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
I bet
Todd,
you enjoyed it, huh?
If you want. I'm sorry, Todd, go ahead.
And I'll bet you enjoyed every bit of it, huh?
Oh, man. Now, see, I'm a drag racer, so anytime they let me turn, I'm having a blast.
We had an exciting year. We went to opening weekend there where I drove my Blazer around the track for autism, and oh my goodness, the feeling is just such a rush.
I was in a regular car too, but you know what? It didn't matter. It was, you know, we got just going around there and just imagining what those drivers get to, you know, just see their perspective and such. It's a thrill. I had a, you know, I've driven lots of the drag strips, but we don't get to do any corners very often. So it was probably a huge highlight for me, probably a lifetime bucket list item.
Yeah, that sounds real good, Tina. And, yeah, I texted you, I don't know, the other day or something. Do you have a guest coming on later, Tina? I can't remember what you told me.
Yes, I do. Actually, Kevin Self, he runs a Comp Eliminator, which is one of the most interesting classes. And in fact, most people will hands down say it's the most interesting class in sportsman racing. And right now, I believe, last time I checked, he was number one in the points, and he might hadn't even intended on going for world champion, but he's, you know, doing so well this year, they might, you know, get pushed into doing a run for the world. They're number one in JEGS All-Stars points and number one in our division down here in Division 4, which is South Central. Plus, they're engine builders, and they build not only different drag racing engines, but they build them, I know, for sand drags and I think a few other different kinds of racing. And he's going to come on and you know, give us, you know, his idea about a little bit about what's going on in racing. And, you know, so anybody who's got some good questions about engine builders, I'll tell you, this is the guy to ask, because he took a motor of mine that was nothing but average and absolutely gave it back to me dead consistent. I mean, when I dropped that engine in my car, within three passes, I was within 3/1000ths of a second accurate. And we talked a little bit about last week, but accuracy and consistency in the sportsman classes are really what we live and breathe by. And, you know, there are tons of little things that these guys know that, you know, you're just not going to find at most places, that's for sure. So anyway, he'll be coming on here soon. I kind of came on a little bit earlier today than usual, so I don't know if he's dialing in yet, but he should be here in a couple of minutes.
Okay, yeah. Whenever Suzanne gets it, I'll sort of bring you over into the screening room, and I'll let you know. Sort of waiting on Tony B here. I hadn't heard from him. Have you talked to him lately, Tina?
I talked to him a couple of days ago. He was doing real good, but actually was hoping to get a call into him before I called into the show because I got some questions for him, but I guess we'll just have to ask him that stuff on the air. So, well, I guess we're all waiting on him.
Well, yeah, we can wait on him. Or Tina, I can – Todd, do you have any questions you want to ask Tina about, you know, what she does and her racing experiences and everything? Todd, you got the floor with Tina Stuff.
Well, I know you said, you know, you got to drive, the Freightliner. Am I correct?
I drive a 565 in a rail dragster. Run the Super Comp or Top Dragster is the categories that my car runs in.
Now, I've watched them race.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to race a machine, you know, that size, what's that like being in that position, driving them around the track like they do?
See, I missed part of the question.
What's it like being able to drive a machine like that around the track?
Well, you know what? The biggest thing is the acceleration is really what physically affects you more than anything. When the first, I'd say, 20 passes I took in a car going, say, 170, it's getting probably 80% of its actual acceleration is happening in the first eighth mile. So it's happening in the first, say, 5 seconds. And it literally will knock your vision off. I don't know, like, if you're a big roller coaster person, but if you've ever tried to, like, stare at something or focus on something when you're going on a roller coaster, everything's shaken, that's kind of the experience going down the track the first, you know, say, 20 trips. And then your body, I'll tell you, the body's an amazing thing. After about 20 passes, all that goes away, and it's just a smooth ride. So you get hit hard back in the seat, and, you know, you just aim forward. It's in some ways, driving dragsters is probably simple once you know which buttons to push and the procedure. Where it gets really hairy is when something doesn't go right, because when it doesn't go right, it doesn't go right really quickly. And then you kind of get that, kissing Jesus thing. I mean, it hits you with a jolt of adrenaline that it actually hurts. Because it's just, yeah, it's scary at that point. It gets really scary really quick. And that's where you hope that the, you know, driving by the gut, you know, the seat of your pants kicks in. Because there's really no way other than experience to teach somebody or to tell somebody what to do if such and such goes wrong. So you kind of... You find out real quick if that's something that you can live with and you enjoy, or you see a lot of people, you know, they get one hairy ride and they're done. And that was enough fun, and they move on to the next thing. So, and that kind of actually happens every time you incrementally move up to a faster speed. When I went from a car that was going 170 to one that was going in the 90s, the exact same thing happened. And after about 12, 20 passes, your body acclimates, and I think it probably has to do with that G-force, and you naturally learn how to tense up to keep that blood up in your head. But it's a rush.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. And Tina, who did you say that your guest was? Was it Kevin Self?
Kevin Self, yeah. He's calling in from Durant,
okay.
Oklahoma.
Okay, well, we've got Kevin coming on right now. Todd, stay on, and
Tina, me and Tyler just sort of slide back and let y'all talk until we can get Tony on. We're going to bring Mr. Kevin Self in the pit stop, Tennis Painter, Stephen Wilson. Here he comes.
Well, you don't go too far because you probably have better questions than I do because, you know.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Mr. Kevin Self, you're in the pit stop with Tim Spain and Stephen Wilson. When Stephen's not here, he took the night off. And I want to thank you for calling in, and I'm going to hand you over to Miss Tina Stoll. Y'all have got the floor.
Yes,
and
sir.
Todd, a slide back.
Hello,
thanks,
Kevin.
Kevin.
Hey, Tina.
And
how
big
are you?
Hello to my favorite person.
Y'all doing okay tonight?
We're doing good. We're glad. Thank you very much for calling in a bit early. I know that I had told you probably a little bit later, but I appreciate it. I gave him a little bit of background on you.
Okay.
You know, comp eliminator, engine builder, genius extraordinaire. But I wanted to kind of have you just describe. I was going to tell him what comp is, and, of course, you know, I do what everybody does. Took a deep breath and went, I don't know where to start. I'll say this first off, in sportsman racing, you have your alcohol cars, which are basically like top fuel, top funny car, and then the next in that pecking order is comp eliminator. These guys are the brain surgeons, heart surgeons, top of the cream of the crop when it comes to guys who are able to do stuff mechanically, engine-wise, and drivers. This is a category that allows almost any type of car to race against each other. There's a nationally set handicap for each class, and they are bringing out every ounce of horsepower out of each one of these engines just to stay competitive. With that being said, you know, Kevin, give us a little, you know, NHRA 101 on comp eliminator and kind of a little bit what that looks like so that when people are at the track, they'll know when your class is coming up.
Well, you know, Tina, as you already know, comp has about real close to 100 different classes that you can run. It's a real diversified deal, and you see it's probably one of the most complicated in NHRA because of the different classes and how many different ones that they are. You know, you've got classes that allow you to run open-wheel cars, which are dragsters and halters, and then you've got classes that run door cars. And all different engine combinations. You've got turbocharged cars. You've got blown cars.
Yeah, one of the interesting things I've noticed is, like, it's one of the only classes you'll see, you know, eight-cylinder dragster, full wing, it looks like it's going to go a billion miles an hour, up against a little four-cylinder. Explain how in the world that could be fair to have those two different kinds of cars racing each other.
Well, the NHRA has got a handicap index that is actually set nationally for all the different classes of cars, and the way they do that is they handicap them off of an index, and each class of car, I might add, the way they classify a lot of those deals are pounds of weight per cubic inch of the motor.
Makes sense.
And you take an engine like mine in my car is 257 cubic inches, and 6 pounds per cubic inch, I have to weigh 1540. And all the classes have a weight minimum to keep the cars safe, so you can't build the cars but so light to keep them safe so that nobody gets crazy.
And they'd do that, wouldn't they, if they could?
Oh, yeah. They would make those things as light as possible, but, you know, they're pretty good at keeping things safe by keeping a weight minimum in there.
And one of the things that might be noted is that even though NHRA comes up with this mystical number of an index, it's actually kind of regulated by the guys that drive that car.
That's exactly right.
And how does that work?
Well, once that index is set by NHRA and they kind of figure out how much horsepower that style of motor or that type of car should, mm-hmm. and what that type of car should go for ET, then they set a national index, which that class is handicapped off of. after that happens, any time that a racer goes out there and goes more than 6/10 of a second below that national index that is set, a new index is set. And you have that, basically the racer governs it himself. It's kind of one of those things that kind of takes care of itself during the racing process. You've got a car there that's capable of winning, and if you go more than 6/10 under that index, you can actually hurt yourself for later in the race or later in the year.
Yeah, one of the things I talked a little bit about last week that I don't think all motorsports are quite as sensitive to it, is that the weather will adjust our how quick our cars can go. And,
that's,
you know,
exactly
when you're talking
right.
tenths or hundredths of a second, that can be huge. I know that, you know, if you go, say, average air, most comp car or, you know, decent, whatever, summer air, most comp cars can't go 60 under. But what this is one of the only classes that I know of that kind of cringes when we get great air, when we get cold, cool, dry, you know, below sea level type air. These guys cringe because if they hit that national, if they go more than 60 under, and they certainly can in good air, the next race they go to that has bad air, they've actually changed their handicap. So what you could take a car, and by winning a race or hitting that index, you could cost yourself about $20,000 in improvements.
Real easy. And you know, if you take the win and you hit the national index when the air is really good, like you're talking about, then later in the year when we get the summer heat, then you really suffer for it because you don't have that cushion. You don't have that left, and you have to struggle to make the car run when the air gets bad.
And these indexes, too, they're occasionally, and I've only seen it happen a couple of times in the 10 years I've been racing. It probably happened more than I was aware of. But most of these indexes, these aren't come up with every year. It's only when the new car is entered they decide to add another car that they kind of come up with this, we're guessing at this index. And sometimes those classes that haven't really been run might have some advantage. But a lot of these, like your car, I know I've seen you and several others run this class for a while. So these indexes have been established after years of improvements.
Yes, they have. They're not like a new class would be.
Yeah, so it's like these guys, so it's kind of a very self-regulated. Now, here's an interesting question. You're driving an FEA?
Econo-Alter.
Now, you have somebody across the United States in really good air and who doesn't care about the long-term index, just wants to get that Wally. What happens if he goes and hits the index? Does it affect your car as well? I mean,
yes, it definitely affects my car and everybody else that's in that class. And by the way, that does happen quite often. Somebody out on the West Coast or the East Coast gets really good air, and they end up hitting the index that the other guys have to live with, and probably a pretty good chance that they're not going to get their Christmas card that year.
I can imagine somebody going out there and being, especially if they're doing it as a stripe hog or just because they you know, don't know what they're doing, hit that old index, cost you $20,000 in improvements. And,
That's right.
Now you're trying to build, titanium drivers or, you know, whatever it takes to speed the car up. Yeah.
That is one of the things about comp is alcohol dragster and alcohol funny car in the sportsman ranks, and like the pro stocks in the pros, we are constantly trying to find something to make that car go faster, whether it be horsepower or something better in the car or whatever it is. It never ends. We're hunting it all the time.
Well, I tell you, I'm always amazed at the ingenuity that you see, especially on competition days when things, you know, something breaks. And I mean, I've seen them, you know, to get out there and just get that shot at to go down the track. I mean, there's some serious mad science going on out there.
I guarantee you, and I might also add that when it comes down to time in the late rounds, when you've made it to the late rounds, a lot of times these guys don't mind hitting these indexes when they've got a chance at a Wally.
Now, I've gone down and see people, like, kind of, I can't tell if they're giving up or lifting or what. I mean, are there gentlemen's agreements sometimes? Or, you know, I would imagine you only find out if he's a gentleman when you cross the finish line, especially when
That's
it comes
true.
To hitting indexes.
That's true.
Explain kind of a little bit about what that's all about, because I think that's kind of interesting about, you know, you have to find out where your trust lies.
Well, you know, if you take two really, really fast cars and both guys know they have a shot at hitting the national index, then I have seen deals made to where guys will say, okay, we're going to run them to 1,000 feet, and whoever's ahead at 1,000 feet, we're going to shut them off. And that happens sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't come out real well. But
well, I've seen it where, you know, I mean, stood there and heard the agreement,
mm-hmm.
and sure enough, one of them just couldn't lift.
Yes.
There's something about when you're winning and you're in it, and it's happening that quick, and I've seen even the guy go back and get all mad at himself because he meant to lift, and he goes, literally, I couldn't lift. I just couldn't bring myself to do it.
Very hard thing to do when you're wheel racing somebody and you know you've got a shot.
Well, you know, I mean, we have something similar in Super Comp. We just call them stripe hogs, and they're people who – just when they're going fast, and I mean, they don't care if they got 20 feet on you. They'll break out, you know, 10 ways to Tuesday because they just can't, you know, they got the stripe, they finally got the stripe, and, you know, even though they know they're going to lose, they just can't lift.
They just don't want to lift. Yeah, that's right.
Well, an interesting point you had made, and I thought about it, and it's that Comp Eliminator, one of the questions I get about Super Comp is, you know, why aren't we running full out and so forth. Comp is one of those classes left that literally whoever crosses that finish line first wins.
That's right. That is the winner. You may suffer later in the race for it,
mm-hmm.
or later in the year because you took that win, but you have that option to take that win if you have a fast enough car. And, go ahead there, Tina.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, okay, so like if you go, like we said, you go down there and you do hit your index, and, you know, say you crush it. You know, now your 60 car is no better than a 40 car. Why wouldn't you just, you know, get rid of that car and go grab another car in a different category and run with that?
Well, a lot of guys do swap those things around like that, and the NHRA does have it now where you can't swap classes in a lot of different categories. You can't get in a lot of different classes. They only have it like where you can move around to two different classes for the world when you run for the world championship.
Okay.
That does keep guys from getting in so many different classes.
Now, would it also have to be is that this stuff ain't easy?
Yeah.
Is that you can't, you know, I mean, I imagine you and how long have you been running your yellow roadster?
I have been in that thing since 05.
Okay, so you guys know that puppy backwards and forward. When it comes to just picking up and trying to change classes, how long do you think that learning curve, and assuming that not everybody is an engine builder like you and a car builder, I mean, you know, I'd say almost the average racer, to just pick up and grab a new car and be able to get it to a point of being competitive –
it's a very tough thing to do, no doubt. That's not something when you've got a car that you're real familiar with and you know what it does and you've got hundreds of runs in, it's real hard to just jump over into something else. And just because the index looks a little bit better, sometime you get over there and you find out that you've opened a whole new can of worms.
Yeah.
You know,
let's change over to alcohol. That sounds good.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
There you go. There you go. Well, wow. Well, you know, I know that you're doing real well in JEGS, JEGS All-Star, which is kind of a best way to describe it is a season within the season.
Yeah.
It's a set number of regs that JEGS has a special race for that's you know, almost as good as getting that world championship. I know that a lot of guys probably prefer that over the world championship, but or maybe a few. But you're doing real well on that. But give us kind of an update on where you're at with that.
Doing real well on that. We're up there high in the points for our division for the Jags All-Star deal. So that will be for next year's race at Chicago, where they have a Jags All-Star race inside of a regular national event race. So it's actually a two-race deal.
So
also in the division, 4 points, we're way high. We're up at the top in the division right now.
Okay. And then so you're about halfway through this year for division 4 points. And at the beginning for the Jags points, is that correct? Or
yeah,
am I...
yes, you're exactly. Yep, that is it.
Okay,
we are at the beginning of the Jags points, and we're about halfway through on the. And we have, I might add, we have missed one race in the divisional race that we will make up later in the year.
Oh well, that will be nice because that that's a nice little. That's kind of sweet. If people don't know how points work, is at some point in the year, you're only allowed to count a certain number of races out of, I think it's 5 out of 8. Is that correct?
I think they have it now where you can count 6 of them out of 8, I believe.
So as you get to the higher number of races, if you have a bad race, or you actually do better than one of your lower races, you get to throw the bad race out and come in with the race with the better points.
That's
now,
right.
The fact that you've missed one race means that probably, and most of these guys that race this, if they're in the competition for points, they've probably run every single race. So the fact that you're at the top of the points and have an extra race,
that looks really good for us.
That's a huge advantage.
Yeah. Things
that's how you sleep
fall,
at night.
Fall good.
That's definitely. So what do you think, you know, as far as that and racing, what do you think is the biggest challenge since you do both, you know, both the mechanicking side and the driving? What part of, for a lot of people who are spectators and they're the mechanics versus the drivers, what do you think is the biggest difference? And, you know, I mean, as the years go by, where do you think the biggest challenge lies? What do you actually prefer?
Well, you know, I really enjoy both parts, but I really enjoy the driving part. It is a lot of pressure. You do have a lot of pressure on you. When you have a really fast car, it's even more pressure. But the driving part, I like to do both deals, but I'm really, really fond of the driving part, too.
I'd have to agree with you.
that kind of lets you enjoy all your hard work. If you do build your own engines and you do work on your car, that kind of lets you enjoy the better part of the deal.
Yeah. And I can't imagine, everybody's got their own enjoyment. I know guys that crew cars and, you know, have absolutely no interest to get behind that wheel, but I cannot imagine that watching a race, you can get the same kind of adrenaline rush of going down the track. Any day. I think they worry as much.
Yes.
And
they
go through the agony of the how are we gonna do and the victories there, but definitely, you know, your dad and Johnny, they're you got some great guys working with you, and I know, and of course, I don't know if I had mentioned it yet, but you know, y'all build my engine, and you know that I couldn't do it without the guys who actually work on the engines, and no driver can without having that. It's a 50-50 partnership. The driver gets to, you know, I always say they get all the glory and all the blame.
Yes. Well, that's very true. That's very true. It's there's just nothing can compare, as you know, to sitting behind that wheel, and even though the light's on you and it's all up to you and the pressure's on you, it's still it's really good.
It's fun. And, you know, as great as wins are, when those losses come, and I'll tell you, anybody who ever wants to be in racing, you better get used to the idea you got to learn to lose before you can learn to win. And, you know, even in drag racing, what a lot of times people don't realize is that it takes, you know, in your case, I think five rounds,
mm-hmm.
five or four, depending mm-hmm. on how many entries they have.
Depending on
five
the entries,
four
that's
rounds,
right.
And everybody else, you know, 36 drivers, only one guy gets to go home without losing that day.
That's right.
And
there's only
going to
be one winner.
Yeah. And, you know, so, you know, you have, you know, one guy who gets to go home. I mean, of course, you still get to be proud even, you know, because, you know, this stuff ain't easy. But I'll tell you, it's a long drive home, especially when it's, you know, driver error or, you know, mechanical error that, you know, could have been – coulda, shoulda, woulda, and I know
yes.
we've all had days where, you know, stuff happens, man. It just happens. But
we just had that conversation not long ago, coming home from one of these races, how short the trip seems when you win.
Yeah.
And when you lose, the trip's awful long.
Well, man, what has been your biggest victory? What's the one that sticks, and what makes it stick, and what made it a special one for you?
Well, the biggest was the first national event that I won, the Wally that I won in Belrose, Louisiana at the Jegs Sports Nationals, the Cajun Sports Nationals, and that was my first national event win. And then I went back to that race the next year and won it again. And that really sticks, I mean, to win my first national event there.
I'm still waiting, so I have to trust you on that. But that, you know, that is definitely, they always say that first win is what gets burned in the deepest.
No, I think so. You know, it has for me. And I guess the next best, I've got two Wallys, I've got two national event runner-ups, and I've been in seven final rounds at divisional level.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got three wins there, so I've had in a short period of time there, I've been pretty blessed. I really have.
Well, yeah, it has been kind of short. How long have you been? Well, I know you've been driving a long time, but how long have you been driving I mean, has that all happened in the last couple of years? Is that right?
Yeah, it has, and you know, actually since 07, I've really. That's really when everything really started to click for me pretty good, and I've had a good car, had something that was really capable of winning anywhere I've been, and that's a tremendous difference.
Yes.
That is a tremendous difference, and I, of course, I've been around this comp eliminated racing all my life, and I grew up in this stuff, so I was fortunate enough to grow up in around my dad, who's an engine builder, and raced comp and raced the old modified.
He's an accomplished racer, very
yes.
accomplished racer.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I've seen some of the articles that were written on him and all that, and you know, he's was he the driver prior to you? Or?
Yes, he was. He was the driver prior to me, and I just did all the cylinder head and engine work and. On that stuff. Now, I did drive in modified Eliminator in the late 70s.
Uh-huh.
And I drove a car that, until they did away with the modified Eliminator class. And then I started working on stuff for him.
For him. And then, now, did you have to push him out of the seat, or did he have to pull you in?
No, he actually had a pretty spectacular crash in Ennis, Texas. There at the national event in 2000. He had a Pro Stock Pontiac style car that was running in
uh-huh.
the comp eliminator class, and he had a really bad crash in that thing, and he hasn't been back in the seat since.
Those Pro Stocks, when I went to Frank Holly school, the aerodynamics on them, he basically said, a funny car has about 6,500 pounds of downforce pressure on that car when it's crossing the finish line.
Yes.
And he said those Pro Stocks are about neutral. he said there's so little downforce on them because of the aerodynamics of those cars and the speed that they're at when they're crossing that finish line, that they just literally are, you know, skating on ice. Those are, and that's truly why a lot of people really love that class, because it does require a ton of driving and expertise and skill. But that is a, I think probably some of the most horrific crashes that I've seen have been pro stock.
Have been in the pro stock category. So, yeah, a lot of them have. They really have. And those cars are, to be fast, those style of cars have to be, whether they're in comp eliminator or whether they're in pro stock. Those cars
I drove a slow version, and that was enough for me.
I understand. They really have to be on edge to be fast.
They drive, you know, the shorter. I think that's probably why I've really enjoyed the long rail versus the short wheelbase. And you being in a short wheelbase, I know I've seen you doing some dancing.
Yes.
The only squirrelier thing is watching the crew on the starting line trying to lean and help and hop and, you know, to, you know, keep it. It's kind of like the old passenger seat, foot through the floor on the brake thing. You can watch the crew back there leaning and hopping, but those, you know, those things get a little bit of a skid under those tires, and they can turn sideways quick.
They can. If down in the lower part of the track, you're pretty good with them, but when they get up to speed and get up around the eighth mile, there's a lot of things happen really quick.
And going about learning that, I mentioned this earlier. It's like, you know, if everything were going great, they're pretty easy to drive.
Yes, they are.
When things don't go as expected, they're, you know, you get to say, as I put it, kiss Jesus real quick, because it's happening so quick. How much of that do you think seat of the pants, you know, automatic reaction
I think it has to become kind of second nature to you. I'm sure you feel the same way, that it just kind of, you know, after you get in there and you make so many runs with those things, it just kind of becomes second nature to you. When you have to correct one of those cars, you don't think about it.
Yeah, it's like just keep whatever it takes to keep it straight. We'll worry
whatever
about the rest
it takes
later.
That's right.
Man, yeah. Well, geez. Try to think what's the next race you got coming up? What do you think's next on your agenda?
Next race we've got coming up, of course, the next big race we have coming up will be Indy.
We'll
go to U.S. Nationals at Indy in the later part of August there, of course. And on the divisional level, we're probably going to run a race in Topeka, Kansas next weekend.
Okay. I was hoping to get out there. I think I'm going to try to hit the Topeka, the one right before Indy.
Right before Indy.
It's a long haul for me. So if I, you know, once my trailer gets moving, I try to keep it going.
Those are two
nice races, not too far from each other. Do you think you're going to head out to Vegas? Is that going to be to whether or not World Champion is in?
Yeah, that's going to depend on what happens at Indy, and of course we're going to run one at St. Louis there a little later, a national event, and then we'll run the Ennis Texas race, which will be a national event. And depending on what's happening by that time, you know,
a lot of racing. For some reason, it feels kind of like the season's short, but I guess we still got a lot to go.
We do. We have a lot to go. We sure do.
It's definitely a long haul. You kind of are picking your races throughout the year, so it's a combination of good conditions. Do you have favorite tracks? What kind of dictates where you decide to race?
Well, right now since we have a shot at that divisional deal, we're kind of trying to pick some of the slower, hotter races to try to protect that index some. And since we have a capable car, that's one reason we're thinking about the Topeka, Kansas race next weekend, is because the weather's probably going to be hot.
Yeah.
And should turn good in our favor as far as that part goes, to try to protect our index for later in the year.
You know, it's kind of funny because that's kind of the opposite. I usually avoid the hot, swampy, miserable races.
Yes.
You know, and yet that's drawing you in. It's strategically, it sounds great. But man, I can attest that the racing can be a bit brutal out there.
It can, and it does take a toll on the drivers with all the suits and stuff we have to wear, you know.
You got any tricks for staying cool?
You know, I really don't, other than lots of ice.
I was going to say, I've filled my suit up with ice a few times.
Yes,
just to keep
I'm
from melting on that, especially down in Memphis. If you know, when we were running midsummer or whatever it was, it can be it definitely brutal is a perfect word.
I'm telling you, and another thing you kind of got to contend with there too. Of course, you know that is the. When it's real hot weather, sometimes you got to contend with those track conditions, and you got to watch that track. If that track gets too hot, it'll sure bite you.
Yeah. You know what? Explain what that means, because if you know, not all motorsports kind of run the same way. Why would you think the hotter it gets, the stickier it gets, the better the traction? What's going on there from a
well, the hotter it gets, the greasier it gets usually, and. When it gets to a point, there's a breaking point there, kind of like they are on everything else. When it gets so hot, when the track temp gets so hot, the traction's going to go away. And if you don't have some cloud cover to come in or something to try to cool that thing back down, you got to really calm your car down to get down the racetrack.
And that's probably, I would imagine part of the hardest part of that is you know, by that point you probably have no more qualifying passes and you're in eliminations.
That's guessing right.
With that stuff. Yeah, well, definitely the change in temperatures and all that, because, say NASCAR, because they're running constantly, they can see how things are changing in progress. With drag racing, you have those gaps of hours and, you know, half a day in between. And, you know, it's kind of hard to dictate, you know, be able to tell all the time what your car is going to do based off of what, you know, other cars is going to do.
Yep.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a fun class. It's a brutal class on the ego and on the wallet, but it certainly is a fun one. And, man, I hate to say it, but I wish I was still in it to some degree, but in other parts I'm totally relieved I'm not.
Well.
let's find out if anybody else had any questions or wanted to give any, say anything with you or had any ideas or something before we let you go. And I sure as heck hope you come back and keep us posted on what's been going on and, give us a little bit of heads up on the newest, you know, if there are any changes in the class or anything we need to keep
sure
a pulse
will.
On.
Certainly thank you guys for having me, and anybody out there needs any engine work done or any cylinder heads ported or manifolds fabricated, just remember our place here is Self-Racing Heads and Engines in Durant, Oklahoma.
And I'll definitely remind them, and I'll put a link on and you are out there on Twitter. Do you have a fan page on Facebook?
Yes.
You do. So you're out there on those, so you can follow them on Twitter. I know it's self_racing on Twitter, and then probably self-racing on Facebook.
On Facebook, yes.
And, I'll tell you, you get a question on, an engine or something like that, these guys can, turn a sow into a purse.
There you go.
There you go. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. And hopefully when you're gone, I'm not standing here talking to myself. But, thank you so much, Kevin. And I'll definitely see you at Indy. Maybe I'll see you at Topeka. Depends on, how I can rally the troops on my end. And appreciate all that you've done. So you have a great year. Tell Glenn and Johnny hello for me.
I sure will.
We'll talk to you real soon.
Thank you very much.
Goodbye. Well, hey, I really appreciate that. Kevin Self, great guy and an excellent racer, very respected amongst the ranks of racers out on NHRA. Anyhow, Tim, are you around, or what do we got going?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here. Todd's here. Suzanne got a text from Tony earlier. Tony's sick, so that's why he didn't call in, Tina.
Well, Tony, get well. We'll all be praying for you, No fun to be sick, especially during the summer. So
that's
if he's
right.
listening in, hope he gives our wishes.
Yes, ma'am. He will. And Tina, any last thoughts before we close out? We've got 20 minutes, but I mean, you know, we don't want to have no dead air. Any last thoughts you want to throw out, and then we'll let Todd come in, and you go ahead, sweetie. You got the floor.
Okay. Well, nope. Not much. We got Denver coming up this weekend. That should be, you know, that's always an exciting race because all the rules change when you get a mile high. So there, you know, that's always a good one to catch. I know it's on ESPN2. You can go to NHRA.com to check the schedule. They'll usually they're showing the qualifying sessions on Saturday night, so you can kind of stay up with what's going on. But that's definitely a beautiful track in a beautiful part of the country, and definitely one worth watching because usually up there you get some real surprises. The performance, everything is so different in the altitude. So, you know, you get to see some guys that maybe you haven't even heard of doing real well up there. And that's about it.
Okay. And, Tina, I want to thank you very much for being a part of the Pit Stop with Tim Spain, Stephen Wilson on Speedway Digest Radio Network. You do such a great job. I got a text from Stephen a while ago. He said he was listening, but he wouldn't give me no location on where he's at. And, you know, like I said earlier, I don't know if he turned in sick leave or vacation. He talked to Suzanne. I'll get him later. I'll get a hold of him and find out because I'm not going to pay him if he turned in sick leave.
He's gone covert on
anyway.
It. Okay.
Yes,
well,
ma'am. I don't know where he is. But yes, ma'am, Tina, thank you very much. And we look forward to talking to you next week.
Okay, great. You have a good week. Bye bye.
Yes, ma'am, you too. Bye bye. Okay, Todd, coming down on the end of it here, you got any last thoughts, anything you want to talk about? You know, we got off weekend this weekend, but you got the floor, Todd. Thanks for staying on with me to help me out because Stephen's gone incognito.
Well, you know, I got a good idea where Stephen's hiding. I think he went snowbound.
Snowbound? You think he went north?
You know how they like to bust on about the snow. I figure maybe he decided to go snowbound.
Yeah. He might have got snowed in there in Martinville. Uh-oh. He's texting me. He's texting me. But anyway, we like to play jokes on the boss anyway. But anyway, Todd, thank you very much for what does it say? Heck no, I'm in the sunshine. He's listening, but I'm not going to say where he's at. He said, heck no, I'm in the sunshine. I know where he's at, but I'm not going to say it. Anyway, Todd, thanks for being such a great friend and such a great supporter, and thank you for calling the show, and thanks for filling in for Stephen. And we'll talk at you later, bud. We're going to go ahead and close it out.
All right, well, thanks for having me, and I hope you guys have a great week.
Y'all be safe up there, bud. We'll talk at you next week.
Okay.
All right. Bye, Ty.
That's all, folks.